Hello, and thank you for staying tuned to Health Matters on Channels Television. I am Mary Alale Yusuf. As at Friday, April the 2nd, there were more than 130 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 globally. More than 73 million people have recovered, and the death toll is over 2.8 million. In Nigeria, there were over 163,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19. More than 151,000 recoveries and 2,058 deaths. That's 675 new infections in the past week and 1,849 recoveries. Recovery rate is up to 93% and case fatality rate is 1.26%. Total samples tested are over 1.7 million with just over 40,000 new tests during the week. Now, in some climes, it was National Doctors' Day on March the 30th. This coincided with the first anniversary of the commencement of Nigeria's COVID-19 lockdown. The National Doctors' Day is one set aside to recognize efforts and contributions of doctors to keep individuals and communities healthy. My guest today is a consultant family medicine physician at the Lagos State University Teaching Hospital and former chairman of the Medical Guild Lagos chapter, Dr. Olujimi Shodipo. Thanks for coming to the show.
Thank you. I'm still the chairman.
Oh, you're still the chairman.
Yes, I am.
Okay,
I am.
Then.
Yes,
forgive
you.
My sleep.
Not a problem.
All right, then.
Yes.
It goes on for how long?
It's a two-year tenure. So
okay.
It's ending
unlike the
December.
NMA thing,
exactly.
That is 1 year.
Yeah.
Now, this is the first time I'm hearing of a National Doctors' Day.
Yeah.
Have we ever observed this in Nigeria?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, no. It's something that started in the United States of America. But I think this year, there's been a greater realization of the importance of the medical doctor and, of course, of the whole health team.
Our global village is becoming smaller.
Exactly. So this year, I mean, people latched onto it and felt, okay, let's celebrate the doctor this year. And it's been nice, I mean, getting some calls, text messages, and WhatsApp messages saying, thank you for all you do. So. But that's what we're celebrating, March 30th. Yeah.
Okay, we know doctors have been at the forefront in this COVID-19 struggle, and even the COVID-19 suffering, can I say.
Yeah.
But would you say they've done the best for patients' welfare?
Yes, I would say so. Of course, we've had different phases of the COVID pandemic. I can remember when the COVID pandemic started in March, you know, April in Nigeria, when we had the first case, the Italian man. And I mean, I had to visit IDH, which is the Infectious Disease Hospital, Yaba, and I met with the medical director. I was still looking at some pictures that we took together. Then we haven't even started using masks.
I mean,
the WHO hadn't, because there was still this argument in the first
That's
phase.
That's true. It took a while for masks
exactly,
to come on board.
Exactly. So it was the patients should use masks and all that. So, I mean, the doctors took it up, and they really, and that's why we were able to get that confidence for other people to build on, because initially there was this wild fear, but from the colleagues that started there and then colleagues all over the country, I think it was something that we need to commend them for, especially when you consider that they may not have had the level of personal protective equipment that some other people in other parts of the world had, but they took it on, and you know, we need to commend them and we need to celebrate them. It's been a wonderful thing. And as it's progressed, I think the doctors have taken the lead and it's made other healthcare workers to have the confidence. And everybody has been working together as a team. And now we have people managing COVID better,
yes.
Even the home-based care, those with severe cases. And I think that's why the fatality rate has dropped.
I think the home-based care was a brilliant idea.
Yes,
brilliant.
It was.
Especially because of the available space for patients.
Exactly.
The way they were multiplying and everything.
Yeah, and then
it's been established,
challenge.
Though, that doctors in Nigeria are generally not satisfied with their lot.
Yeah.
You know. But amongst all groupings of doctors, resident doctors seem to be the most volatile. Mm. Is there a reason for this?
Well, I think the resident doctor... I was a resident doctor until a few years ago, and resident doctors are doctors who are undergoing specialist training. They've always played a critical role in terms of advocating for doctors' rights and also ensuring that patients' rights and welfare get taken care of. We know that we have, various groups of doctors, but the resident doctors provide a lot of the specialist care that we get, of course, under supervision of consultants. So when there are challenges, they tend to bear a lot of the brunt of those challenges. And because of the very nature of that drive to get to perfection, I mean, they are less tolerant of some things that older colleagues would just say, okay, there's a problem in the system, let me just leave it. No. Mm. So I think that drives that process. And I need to mention here that that has been, I mean, they have been a major factor that have brought about a lot of gains that we're having in the health sector as a whole, especially when it comes to welfare, both for patients and also for healthcare workers in general. Okay. Because a number of times we know that the government doesn't make a move to try to solve problems unless there's some level of agitation. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to drive us maybe to the current situation that is going on now, where, you know, we have a National Association of Resident Doctors strike. And one of the major issues there has to do with the house officers. Now, the house officers are medical students that have become doctors. So they are undergoing what we call an internship training.
So they are fresh doctors.
They are fresh doctors going on for a year, following which they will go for their youth corps service. And we know that a lot of people, of course, on finishing medical school, you have a lot of bills to pay. Some people have taken loans, you know, a lot of expectations on them. And you've started working for 3-4 months and you've not been paid your salary. And the reason why you've not been paid is not because the money is not there, but because there's some administrative lapse between the people that should compile the names or that feel that this is the number and those that should release the funds. And the National Association of Resident Doctors, of course, working with other affiliates, including the Nigerian Medical Association, has been advocating that, can you just pay these people? Can you find a short-term solution while you look at the longer-term problem and try to solve that? Of course, everything fell onto deaf ears until a strike began, and then suddenly things that couldn't be done in 4 months, suddenly people are calling for meetings, 12 a.m., 1 a.m., and sometimes it just shows you the attitude of government to some of these challenges. And I think that is what is driving a lot of the agitation in the health sector. And as I always tell people, if you don't get it right with the young doctor, we're going to end up in a very bad situation, because at that point, a lot of house officers have made up their mind that they're not going to practice in Nigeria any longer. So all the investment
will come
wasted.
To that in a bit.
So really, the resident doctors play a critical role.
And you can say, I mean, from your explanation, that they uphold the interests of all the doctors' groupings.
All the doctors' groupings and the healthcare worker groupings.
The healthcare
because
workers, too.
There is no benefit that comes to the doctor that eventually doesn't, you know, trickle down to other healthcare workers and the whole sector, because part of what they agitate for is also improved, you know, services. And at the end of the day, the patients tend to benefit from that. For example, even improved ratio of doctors to patients. So sometimes you have maybe very few doctors. Doctors have exited the system, you know, people are leaving, and they're not replaced. And you need this agitation to start all over again. And sometimes government
shows this.
How
do we improve that ratio? It's very important because, I heard rumors that even in the heat of the pandemic, the lockdown, doctors were leaving. Is this true?
Very, very true. Yeah. I know a couple of colleagues that left. And again, I think we just need to realize that. I think one thing that I have taken away from COVID is that the healthcare sector is important, whether you like it or not, because you have to be healthy for the economy to move, for every other part of the world to move. And what happened was that for some parts, especially the developed world, United Kingdom, when they saw the challenges that were coming up with COVID, especially with the first wave, increasing number of ICU admissions and co, what did they do? They started looking actively, aggressively for doctors that could solve this problem.
And so Nigeria was open wide.
You know, I tell people that we have, minus one thing we need to realize, that we have very good medical schools that are training very good medical doctors. Just the United States Physician of the Year, they were just celebrating him, Professor, I think, Opopo or something like that from River State. He's a Nigerian. I was talking to a young doctor that came back from the UK for his wedding just on Thursday, and he was telling me about he's going back, and he was telling me about some of the things that he learned in Nigeria about cancer management. He's not even started his residency. When he got to the UK and he was applying it, they grabbed him. They said, you have to do internal medicine and subspecialize in oncology. Yeah, this is somebody that has not even undergone any form of specialist training.
Okay, so we have the training.
We have it.
But we can't keep the doctors.
Yes, because the government has not seen it as a priority to keep doctors in place. Because I think that my own reason that why this is happening is are two. Number one is that the top government officials don't access care here. And I'm sure, I mean, we're all aware that Mr. President just traveled abroad for care. We also know that a majority of our government officials don't access care. So
if they were to access care here,
yes,
would they get what they needed?
They would get what they need because they already have the ingredients. And the most important ingredient that you need is manpower.
Okay.
Even if you buy all the equipment in this world and you don't have the skill and expertise to operate those equipment, you're going to run into a problem. But what has been proven time and time again is you have very good manpower here. You have very good doctors. These are doctors that go abroad and excel. So all you need is to invest in this sector, bring in the necessary equipment, then create the policy. I was just thinking about it. The government has had a policy for the entertainment sector. The government has a policy on the banking sector to encourage, you know, utilization of this sector, to encourage more people to come in. What's the policy on health? For example, if people want to come back to the country, the brain gain that we're talking about, because we are talking about brain gain, but some people want to come back. That doctor, that young doctor told me, that Shoripo, I'm going to want to come back to Nigeria and make an impact when I'm finished with my residency training. What are we doing to encourage him? Are we talking about soft loans at a very low percentage so that they pay? Are we talking about some form of tax relief? Because right now the government sees a hospital as any other business, but we know that we have challenges with low and middle income people. What are we doing about our health insurance?
Yes,
because once you cannot get health insurance right, in a country like Nigeria, healthcare is expensive. But once you have healthcare insurance working, what you have is that you're able to pool resources of people, and then people that cannot afford it, they're able to access care. That's what happens all over the world. And so what are those policies in place? But of course, if government officials and their families need to use these hospitals, let's use the UK, for example. The Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, when he had COVID, was admitted in the UK.
That's right.
Of course, so if he got there and there wasn't a ventilator, there weren't monitors to
policies
monitor
would be flying after
Of course, he would know that. But of course, if I know that, and that was one thing that I think COVID too, and look at what happened. When COVID started, okay, there's no money. Suddenly money started coming into the healthcare sector. Imagine that we've had this kind of investment over time. What we'll be talking about, we'll be looking at this place like some form of Dubai in terms of healthcare. Because even with our deficiency, because of our skilled manpower, we still have some of the best skilled manpower in the whole of West Africa and even Africa. So you even have some level of tourism coming in from Benin Republic, Ghana, some other, because they can access those specialists there. But we are gradually losing it because our best hands are leaving. And even those that are left behind, we are now leading to a source of demotivation. And we must be careful about that because, you know, one thing about medicine is there's what we call the humanness of medicine, where you go beyond what you're supposed to do because you feel that you have a duty of care. But gradually, the government is trying to grind that out of people, you know, make it seem as if you're not doing anything special. I mean, when this whole discussion on the NAD strike started, someone just played a clip of what a former health minister mentioned when they asked him about the fact that, oh, doctors are leaving the country, what do you think about it? And his own comment then was that, okay, everybody cannot be a specialist, some people can be farmers. I mean, it was okay. So flippant. It wasn't, it didn't show the import of the challenge, especially when you have, in some places, probably a doctor to 100,000 people. There are some communities that don't have doctors.
Strike. Speaking yes. about the strike, yeah. You know, you and I, we know this, that once doctors even half get the demands that they are asking.
Yeah.
Next thing is that health workers go on their strike. And then it goes round and round and round. And
it's like a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle, and I'm wondering how the government is even able to bear it. Mm. Is there a solution in sight?
Well, there is a solution in sight, and that solution has to do with one, let's just follow the international best practices. Let us ensure already those policies are in place. For example, we know that there's a ratio of what everybody should get based on your qualifications, based on your expectations. Let's just follow that. I think it solves a lot of problems. So, for example, if it's a ratio of 1.5 to 2 to 1 to, once you're doing it for the doctor, you can proactively just do it for others. We are not, I mean, I've always
without
said
without waiting for a strike.
Yes, without waiting for a strike. As leaders of the healthcare team, we look out for everybody. Some of our other colleagues in terms of other allied health professionals may not look at it that way, but that is what has happened over time. There's no benefit, and I need to mention it here, that the doctor has gotten that others have not gotten. So that's number one. But again, during COVID, something happened. You know, the federal government wanted to negotiate about some COVID allowance. And then I can remember the Nigerian Medical Association led by Professor Fadwile then, you know, they led it. I mean, it was a multidisciplinary team. Everybody
and it was a good discussion,
yes,
right?
It was a good discussion.
We've got to go on a break now. When we come back, we'll continue this. Please stay with us. We're going on a short break. See you in a minute. Welcome back. We're still discussing doctors and national service. This is Channels Television and its Health Matters. You can call 0808-054-2233. It's on your screen now to ask any question on this topic. You can also tweet at CTV_MaryA. Now, talking about the strike, you know, this is a critical time. People are getting vaccines. What's this likely to do to our vaccine drive?
Well, it depends on how the government handles the situation. We were a little bit, I wouldn't say lucky, but the strike has started at a period when we have a little bit of a holiday. So people, the vaccination process is not yet affected. And I think the hope of everybody is that the strike would not be a long strike and the government quickly attends to the issues at hand. Because we all know the enormous responsibility that we all have in terms of ensuring that we get on top of COVID before we have a third wave, which could happen at any time. We've seen that we've started having such a scenario, in Germany,
just
in France.
Just a little carelessness.
Even in the UK, where they vaccinated a lot of people, they're still worried. So I think the hope of everybody, and that's why I want to again commend the NAD, the National Association of Resident Doctors, executives, from the information filtering in. I've been a past executive myself. I was a publicity secretary. Is that they've been on standby. They've been having meetings, 12 a.m., 1 a.m. Even the minister, though he made a lot of comments that were a little bit inflammatory yesterday, the Honorable Minister of Labor, I personally don't think that maybe he helped the situation. This is not a time for a blame game. This is a time for solving problems and ensuring that we don't escalate the problem. So I think that if we can get everything sorted out as soon as possible so that by Tuesday...
Then it won't be affected.
We just hit the ground.
I believe we're getting a call. Hello?
Okay.
Lawal, are you there?
Good afternoon, my sister. Good afternoon to you, my sister, and the doctor in the house.
Good afternoon to you. What's your question?
Yes, you see, I am always a regular follower of your program. So I expected that when we call on such programs like this, you will be able to at least find a way to assist us. The last time I spoke with you, you remember there was a doctor in the house. The doctor is one of the doctors that are coordinating the health workers facing pandemic and all of that. I told you that I wanted to bottle the doctors further, but interestingly, you will just keep my contribution and sweep it under the carpet.
So we're here for you now. What's your question?
Follower of your program, we expected that by the time we make our own contribution, you should allow the doctors in the house to respond. But instead of you doing that, you just throw the thing under the carpet.
Lawal, we're here to answer you now on the particular topic.
I am a prostate cancer patient. Are you listening? Are you with me?
We are listening.
Now, you remember I called you, I told you that I am not surprised with all the things the doctor is saying. That is the kind of leaders we have in this country. You remember I told you I'm also a prostate cancer patient that I have not been able to access one scan over a year. The only two institutions that have one scan in Nigeria today is UCH and Abuja. But unfortunately, the two of them are not working as a result of lack of material. I expected you to allow the doctor to respond to what I was saying.
Since we are talking about national service today, do you have anything to say on the issue?
Yes, I think Mr. Lawal is trying to draw attention to the fact that somebody, or I don't know whether it's him, has some form of prostate problems, cancer, and as part of the management of that and other cancers, they normally ask for a bone scan so that they could assess if there's been spread to the bones. And unfortunately, we only have two centers in Nigeria, which is the University College Hospital, Ibadan, and of course the National Hospital, Abuja. And, well, I'm not aware of whether they are working or not, but from what he mentioned, he said they are down. I think he's just drawing attention to the frustration and challenges that we have. We cannot go into cancer care because we might just really break down when we look at the number of patients, the burden of cancer patients that we have in Nigeria, and the enormity of what is needed, especially radiotherapy. We don't even, we have really, I think, four or five radiotherapy centers in the country that are actually fully functional. And of course, sometimes you have downtimes when they need to repair this, they need to repair that.
So part of our problem is part of the problem.
So infrastructure. So if we can, and that's why I mentioned initially that if we could take the drive that we use for COVID and drive the healthcare sector, I'm telling you, it's something that would improve the nation as a whole. It's something that's
going to improve. Well, do we have the expertise for this kind of problem?
We do have the expertise. Because we have both people. Okay,
let me I believe a call is coming up. Hello. Have we lost Sunday? I think we've lost Sunday. Try again. But we have a cancer center in Lagos.
We do at the at Lutz.
That's
the,
right.
Yes, at Lagos University Teaching Hospital, we have a cancer center, which is commendable. I mean, that was done, I think, last year, though there's a form of private-public partnership
there.
In Abuja, too, they also have a functional one. I think in Benin, too,
maybe
they also
you should
have
try that.
Kano, Abuja, yes. But look at, you know, when you're having someone that has to access care, the person, if I have to travel, for example, if somebody's going to travel to Lagos from maybe another state to come access care, what you're going to have is that person has to deal with accommodation, that person has to deal with the cost of treatments, that person has to deal with feeding, every other thing, and then move along with some family support. So you can only look at the cost. So we need to expand this thing rapidly. But the only way to do that is to have a focused policy to drive this. We know that we always complain about funding. But if you look at the amount of money that is lost on medical tourism, that money should be in Nigeria. That
and we
money
do
should
a lot more.
A lot more, wonderfully more here in Nigeria. But we are losing that money. And it's because there is no policy focused on ensuring that we have these things. We are not against having a system in place that will bring this thing, because we know they are very expensive. But what we are trying to say is that the government must drive this. And one way of them driving it is for them to access care here. Because if I go to a hospital, for example, if I'm a top government official and I go to a hospital and I see that suddenly I cannot access maybe an X-ray, then I don't need anybody to tell me that the next time I'm going to make sure that it's there. But of course, if I have to travel to Dubai, I mean, we have Nigerians that travel. I've interacted with a lot of patients. Because of COVID, they couldn't travel. So now they are now interacting. I say, oh, doctor, I never knew that. Okay, we could get this level of care. I never knew that. Because when they travel, funny enough, they still meet Nigerian doctors. So it's as if, okay, why did I have to travel all this distance to go for a medical screening that I could do in Nigeria?
Let's quickly get that call again. Mrs. Sunday is back on the line. Hello? Are you with us, Mrs. Sunday? Apparently, she can't hear. So let's go back to the issue of vaccines.
Yeah.
You know, there's talk that the second installment of the COVAX vaccines may not come at the time scheduled. But there is a time lag between the first dose and the second dose. What is to be done now?
Well, I think the first thing is, again, we need the government to be proactive, but at least we have 4 million doses now. And I think from the latest data that was released, that was followed, I think we are about vaccinated about 800 and something thousand
more
people.
More than 800.
So let's say about, let's even say we've gotten up to 1 million. So if so, we already have enough doses for that 1 million
of time.
For their second dose. So if we take in another 1 million people, then of course, we'll be able to exhaust. That means we'll have 2 million people that are taking their first dose, second dose. So I think.
Okay, you know, so you're advocating that instead of giving everybody a first dose, give a first and a second.
No, I think that for now, because what we need from the government is we need to be sure on when the second dose is coming. We know that there are challenges with getting these vaccines. And a lot of countries, I mean, the WHO has been advising countries that they shouldn't hoard vaccines, we shouldn't be selfish and things like that. So the government needs to be proactive and give timelines. The challenge we have is if you don't plan for those timelines, you're going to have this kind of problem. I think we should still roll out the vaccines and get as many people as possible onto the first dose, because data is still showing us that we could get some level of benefit from you may not get as much benefit as you will get from getting the second dose, but we should get as many people on the first dose. It will also boost confidence of everybody with the vaccines, because we've had a lot of vaccine hesitancy. No, even before I took my vaccine, some people were monitoring.
But there's no time for that. We've got to go now.
Okay, thank you so much for coming to the program. It's been wonderful.
We appreciate it. Thank you for calling, Lawal and Mrs. Sunday. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'm Mary Alale Yusuf.